Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back, joined by Kevin Freeman. He is a senior fellow at the Center for Security Policy and a guy that we consult with regularly because he has, well, the whole world in his hands, as they say, at least with respect to his appreciation, indeed his deep mastery of the phenomenon of economic warfare. He these days blogs a terrific online resource, globaleconomicwarfare.com. He is also contributing mightily through other vehicles, notably two terrific books on the subject of economic warfare. The first, Secret Weapon, How Economic Terrorism Brought Down the U.S. Stock Market and Why It Can Happen Again, and Game Plan, How to Protect Yourself from the Coming Cyber Economic Attack. We spoke with Kevin earlier in the week, but there's so much news going on in his part of the battle space that we asked him to come aboard for two more deep dive segments, and I'm very appreciative. Kevin, thanks so much for coming back.
Thank you, Frank.
Let me ask you, Kevin, about an issue that has been dogging us for some time, and that is the Iran nuclear deal. President Obama, of course, bequeathed this to us. I call it, as a result, the Obama bomb deal. He, in the process, created a sort of economic vortex, that's the way I think of it, supplying the Iranians with something on the order of $150 billion in kind of found money, some of which, at least, the Iranians are using to bribe European and, for that matter, other companies and governments to do business with them, to invest in Iran, to buy Iranian products, to sell the Iranians products manufactured elsewhere. Talk a little bit, if you would, Kevin Freeman, from an economic warfare point of view, whether not only is this really an example of that kind of warfare practiced by the Iranians, but arguably by our so-called friends in Europe as well, as they're playing along.
Well, Frank, you know, the Europeans have resented us for our stance with the Iranians for quite some time, even though we are protecting them as much as we're protecting ourselves. It goes back to Standard Chartered, the bank that had internal emails, and they were literally laundering money for the Iranians. They were hiding the source of it in their banks here in the United States, complete violation of rules, and they got caught. And when the evidence came out, they were putting, you effing Americans, who are you to tell us what to do with Iran? Well, they want access to our banking markets and they want access to our consumer markets, but they want everything on their terms. And the Iranians are using the money, the $150 billion or so that they got from unfrozen assets that were released to them. They've used that to bring all sorts of European companies into doing business so that it would prevent any possibility of ever putting sanctions on again. It was a bomb. It was an Obama bomb that was placed on our economy, and it's to the detriment of American consumers. It's to the detriment of American companies, and it's really a grave threat to the whole world.
Yeah, well, and our security as well, not least as this nuclear weapons program in Iran moves forward inexorably, covertly at least, and of course has accompanying it, the growing capacity of the Iranians to deliver such weapons to our shores. Frightening thought. Again, this seems to fit, as I was talking about with Michael Waller in the previous segments, a pattern of indifference to American security. And we were promised a course correction. I'm sorry to say there hasn't been nearly as much of that as I had hoped, and I think many American voters had bargained for under Donald Trump. You have pointed out one area in which he has been making a very salutary difference, Kevin Freeman. Talk a bit, if you would, about the no net new regulation strategy that Donald Trump has been applying in the aftermath of the Obama sort of regulatory state overgrowth.
Well, there's an excellent article on this in the Weekly Standard by Peter Boyer that titled Donald Trump, King of Deregulation. The fact is that for the past two administrations, we've been averaging 13,000 new regulations a year, actually for the past 20 years. And yet under the Trump presidency, we've had no net new regulations. So they've eliminated as many regulations as they brought in, which was a campaign promise and one the president has actually kept.
And in particular, you have pointed out, perhaps the Weekly Standard did as well, the as I said, salutary effects of this policy with respect to the EPA. Could you explore that with us a little bit?
Yes. The head of the EPA, Scott Pruitt, has ended the practice of sue and settle, which was when the Environmental Protection Agency couldn't get action from the Congress that, to their liking. They couldn't get the Congress to force regulation in an area or give them authority in an area. They actually encouraged lawsuits from environmental groups that would bring that lawsuit, and then they'd go to court and they'd settle, oh, we will agree to create this new regulation and that will solve the problem. And it was essentially caving to the environmentalist groups. The problem with that from an economic warfare perspective is that Vladimir Putin and the Chinese and others realized that they could control American industry through these sue and settle arrangements. So they funded environmental groups who would then bring about a lawsuit. This is Russian collusion as much clearer than any other challenge, you know, than anything else that we've talked about. They literally were controlling the destiny of American business and how they operate it. And the Trump administration has put a stop to it.
And again, Kevin Freeman, as we've discussed often in the past, Vladimir Putin has made no secret of his desire to destroy at least our fracking industry. And I gather that that was a particular focus of this environmental suing practice that he sponsored. Is that right?
Oh, there's no question. But the side effect of it is all of these net new regulations have dropped our growth, economic growth, by about 2% per year. And so the Trump administration is putting an end to this. It's a very strong pro-domestic energy policy. It's putting the EPA back on target where they ought to be in protecting Americans and not doing the work of foreign nations. And it's giving the opportunity for our economy to grow again. So this is one place, even the Weekly Standard, which has not necessarily been a fan of the president, has said, whatever you think of the president, he's governing, his administration is governing in a conservative fashion, and this is a prime example of that.
Yeah. I guess what this comes down to in part is he's governing in those areas where he can exercise executive authority, where he has to have help from the Congress. Of course, that help has generally not been forthcoming. The source now of considerable consternation, as you know, Kevin Freeman, as some of these members, particularly of the United States Senate, become very naked in their hostility to the president and a desire to take down his administration. And I'm not talking about Chuck Schumer and the Democrats. I'm talking about senior Republicans, notably people like Bob Corker of Tennessee, Jeff Flake of Arizona, John McCain of Arizona as well, for that matter. Kevin, we're going to have to pause in just a moment. When we come back, I would like to ask you about your thinking about the use of trade negotiations or agreements as an instrument of economic warfare as well. I think most of us, at least at an intellectual level, are quite enamored of the idea, the principle that free trade will lift all boats, as they say. But less than free trade, less than genuine, authentic free trade is a whole nother kettle of fish, if I can mix my metaphors. We'll pick up on that and much more with Kevin Freeman in our second segment with him straight ahead. Kevin, we were talking briefly about economic warfare as it is manifesting itself in our time. often at the hands of hostile states like, Russia and China as well. I would be very interested in your current reading in the aftermath of this extraordinary 3.5-hour exposition by Xi Jinping, the communist president, perhaps now president for life. It looks as though he's trying to really take matters entirely into his own hands there. But what he's saying about restoring the eminence of China, the power of China, the influence of it at our expense, and the role that trade is playing in that regard, not so free.
Well, first, I would point out the irony that there are journalists that are fawning all over him with his put China first policy. Well, they look at the president, he says put America first, and he's the devil. Of course, the Chinese are promoting, they want us to be free trade in our orientation, and they're not free trade on their side. And even when we enter into agreements that appear to be free trade, it's like whack-a-mole, because we can agree that we're going to trade freely, but if we don't control currencies at the same time, then their manipulation will show up in the case of manipulating the currency to achieve their trade objectives. So free trade's a great idea. It's something that David Ricardo in the 19th century talked about. And he's right that if everybody is acting in a free trade fashion, it works really well. Everybody's maximized. And it works well in the United States. We have free trade between Texas and Oklahoma and Arkansas and New York and Montana and California. There's free trade between the states, but we have a common currency. We have a common culture. When we're talking on the international standpoint, we'll talk about free trade, but our enemies, China being an adversary at least, will manipulate the trade practices to their own advantage.
Remind us about these Chinese colonels who sort of laid out the blueprint they're following, and specifically how American companies have been faring as they try to get in or stay in the vast China market.
Yeah, well, I have this book that I carry with me everywhere. It's titled Unrestricted Warfare. It was published in 1999, and it is a plan to make China preeminent in the world and make remove America from that position. And I'll give you a perfect example. Absolutely, we want free trade. So Microsoft, we want you to come in and sell us your software in China. And that's fantastic. By the way, we're worried about the security of our customers here. So you have to show us the entire security architecture of your software and literally give us the keys to it so that we can protect our consumers. And we bow and give them that. And the next, what we've done is we've just transferred our strategic advantage intellectual property to the Chinese. We don't have the reverse when they come and sell goods and services here. And an example for that is Kaspersky from Russia. You know, we buy their service, and next thing you know is Kaspersky is taking the NSA tools and hacking tools off of an NSA contractor's computer or wherever it was placed, and now they're made available to the Russians.
It kind of boggles the mind that this is not something that American businessmen and, you know, the government officials who seek to help them aren't actually taking more seriously. Certainly Donald Trump ran for office on that platform. Steve Bannon feels very strongly about it, but this has not exactly been the leitmotif of American policy prior to this administration, for sure, and less so than I would have liked to see during its course so far. Kevin Freeman, let me ask you about this One Belt, One Road scheme of Xi Jinping's. How does that fit into the larger economic warfare agenda and practices of communist China?
Well, there's no question that Xi Jinping has the intention of making China the dominant. They've made it very public. They pronounce it all the time, and they're using every piece of economic clout that they have. And, you know, it's essentially the modern Silk Road, the One Belt, One Road initiative. And it's an opportunity for them to build out in other nations around them and get economic, they, chits that they will then call in when they do, so that, you know, all of Asia is beholden to them, and eventually all the whole world, Africa and other. So it is their investments in order to achieve their objectives. If we did this, we would be seen as empire builders and we would be denounced.
Kevin, what are the other places where we're watching China's activities contributing materially to our insecurity? In a way, it involves economics again, because they are massively supporting, indeed, I think without their support, there would be no North Korea at all. But they are certainly enabling this regime in Pyongyang to threaten us increasingly. And not only economically, it should be said, but also by transferring militarily relevant technology, including nuclear relevant technology, ballistic missiles and the like. As you look at this, Kevin Freeman, I'm wondering what your thoughts are about how we might contend with it. And I would take note that we were both at a luncheon today at which one of our colleagues, Suzanne Schulte, who runs a marvelous program at the Defense Forum Foundation aimed at helping the North Korean people achieve their liberation. But she emphasized the importance of public information and our ability to project it into places like North Korea through outlets like Free North Korea Radio, a private sector initiative, exceedingly cost effective. What are your thoughts on both what we could be doing about the threats that we're facing, thanks in part to the Chinese from North Korea, and in particular in this part of the battle space, public diplomacy, as it's sometimes called, information operations?
Well, a couple of things. One is the Chinese, despite the expectation that they would be reducing trade with North Korea, they've actually increased it substantially this year. I don't know exactly why or what's behind that, but we need to put pressure on China to reduce. They did support the sanctions with the United Nations, but they've now defended that they've increased trade. And so we need to push on that. And one of the things that we learned today at lunch is clearly China does not want to nuclearize the entirety of Asia. And yet the Japanese and others, if North Korea continues down that process, then other Asian nations will want to have nuclear weapons capabilities. And that's not in China's interest. And we need to help them denuclearize the Korean Peninsula. But in terms of helping us economically, the North Korean people have been sold a bill of goods that the United States has been harming them. The reason that they have poor economic conditions is because of the United States, that we've been, you know, sinking the rice boats that are going there and so forth. We've got to get our message into North Korea. We've got to broadcast and get information. We're actually friends of the North Korean people. We need them to understand that we care about. So we've got to promote human rights violations and make those known around the world and let the North Korean people know we care. This is important to us. And I think we can make a difference using those information means.
Kevin Freeman, we have to leave it at that for the moment. Thank you so much for your time today, for the work you do with us. And also, folks, check out his extraordinarily important contributions at globaleconomicwarfare.com. We'll continue this conversation in the near future, my friend. In the meantime, I hope we'll continue our conversation with the rest of you again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.